Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Artist on Air. Today, Julius will dive deep into the powerful instrument of webinars together with the Chief Commercial Officer of Webinar Geek, Volta Rehbergen.
People are busy, and we see trends of customers hosting web shorts, we call them web shorts. So, you know, short webinars, 5-10 minutes, educational, to the point, data dumping, 10 minutes, move on.
In this episode, Walter Rehbergen, the Chief Commercial Officer of Webinar Geek, joins Julius to discuss the ins and outs of webinars in the SaaS industry, how Webinar Geek became a prominent tool for digital engagement, and key strategies for crafting impactful webinars. Walter shares his journey from logistics to SaaS, the impact of COVID on webinar popularity, and actionable tips on optimizing audience engagement, retention, and conversion. I wish you a lot of fun in the next 45 minutes with Walter and my colleague Julius. Enjoy.
Today, I have a very special guest from the Netherlands, a good friend. Walter's here. Good morning, my friend.
Good morning, my friend. So happy to be here.
I'm also happy because I had so many inspirational and energetic touch points with you over the last months, now years already. So I'm very looking forward to this deep talk we're doing today. And we will discuss webinars in detail, something we never have talked about here in the podcast. But before this, Walter, maybe you give a couple of words about yourself. What are you doing? Who are you? And give us some insights.
Yes. Well, thanks for the warm intro. I'm Walter. As you said, I work as a CCO at Webinar Geek. Webinar Geek, as you can probably guess by the name, is a webinar hosting software. We were hosting webinars before COVID made it popular, right? So that's not our tagline. That's my tagline, but you know, it's not the official one. For the rest, I'm father of three kids, twin boys and a lovely daughter of 3 years old, and the boys are almost one. I like music a lot, so I'm a bit of a music addict.
That's nice to hear. Before you came to Webinar Geek now, Walter, like, what is your experience to be the CCO now? So maybe you can give us a short review of your last position or journey in the SaaS business. So what happened the years before?
What happened the years before is, well, I was a bit of a not the smartest one in school, so I dropped out too early, and that was maybe not the best decision in hindsight. You know, I got where I am today, so it's still good. I worked my way up through logistics, so you know, started at the warehouse and then worked my way up in a telco company, all the way up to a level of product management. When in product management, you need to kind of understand your customers, understand your suppliers, understand the product. And from there, I was hijacked by a big SaaS company in the Netherlands called Exact. So they recruited me, and I was responsible for their mid-market portfolio, which was fantastic. So, you know, a big flagship enterprise SaaS, catering to high ARPA customers, very non-profit customers a lot as well. From there, I was doing M&A. So I was also buying some companies because, you know, the big SaaS, the software got so big that there was also need to do a lot of maintenance and not always time for 1,000 hours of innovation. So, you know, it's balancing that, as every SaaS company knows. So we kind of try to fill the gaps of that with merger and acquisition. So I was completing the portfolio with some M&A. And on that long list was a company called Unium. Unium is the former employer of mine that I worked for before Webinar Geek. And that's been fantastic. So I got in touch with them, and ultimately they asked me if I could, you know, build their European office. The Unium is a Swedish based company, so they were doing very good, getting a lot of footprint in the Nordics. And then it was time for them to take a next step. And it was time for me to also take a next step and try to build like a mini business here in the little Netherlands, and from there expand into the rest of Europe, which was a fantastic ride, doing a lot of SaaS events, and met Webinar Geek at one of those SaaS events, you know, clicked throughout the years, and now started a formal collaboration. So that's, I think, in a nutshell, a bit the journey.
All So before we jump into the Webinar Geek story, let me introduce the current podcast sponsor, Salesforce. Salesforce asks you all the questions if you want to unlock a new source of revenue and learn how to shorten your sales cycles by 20% at the same time. The answer is obviously yes. And what do they mean? Salesforce actually is inviting you to join an in-person event either in Berlin, Munich, or Copenhagen this month to learn about their partner program, accelerate your sales cycle by 20%, cut your infrastructure costs by 75%, and reduce security and due diligence time by 80%. Sounds fantastic. Now, becoming a Salesforce partner not only allows you to get to market four to 10 times faster, but also gives you a huge number of benefits, including access to a community of 20 million plus trailblazers and 150,000 customers. And most importantly, it allows you to be part, to be at the forefront of the AI revolution. Because this November, don't miss harnessing the power of autonomous AI, an exclusive Salesforce in-person event series in Munich on November 27th and Berlin on November 28th. To register, please check the link in our show notes. You will discover Salesforce's biggest breakthrough in AI technology so far, and you will learn how to leverage the power of the Salesforce platform to fuel innovation, boost business growth, and drive customer satisfaction. See you there, and now back to Walter and Webinar Geek.
It's very interesting to hear, and I think the journey at Unium was also the time we met, Walter.
Yeah.
So taking a look at Webinar Geek, I think nowadays webinars, as you said, are probably like in the standard, is one of the standard instruments a lot of companies do, good or bad. It's a question we will discuss a bit later, but you have said you started pre-Corona, where I guess this kind of a format was quite innovative and not well distributed. So what was the idea behind and what was the rationale to found this company pre-COVID? This would be super interesting for me to understand.
Yeah, that's actually one of the first questions I asked here as well, because it's like, you know, I get it why you would want to start a company like that now, because it's such a common thing, such a common marketing expression. But before, it was just like, you know, there was just in general a trend in human beings to just want to meet and greet more, but just online as well. And one of the main reasons for webinars starting was actually just the lack of trying to book meetings. You know, as a salesperson, I know you have experiences that as well. It's just hard to get prospects on the table, right? I mean, there's complete businesses coming from that, and there's complete lead gen agencies, and you know, it's just really hard to get people on the table. And webinar was kind of, you know, a way to get people on, get multiple people on the table, share your knowledge, become a thought leader. And, you know, it wasn't called thought leader at that time. That's a modern-ish term, right? One of those SaaS buzzwords. But it was just a very efficient way to do that. And Remco, the founder, spotted that and said, like, you know, we need to jump into that and innovate there and allow people to do actually a bit lead generation, but to wider audience and get people warmed up for the solution. Because, you know, if you look at a buyer journey, there's a lot of people when they're ready for your software, it's easy to talk to them and get a dialogue. But before the actual become warm leads and ready to buy your SaaS, they actually, you know, need to be educated. They need to know they have probably one of your four things that you solve, but they need to understand that there's actually three other problems. And webinars was a really good way to counter that and really become that, you know, provide the education to your prospects before they're actually ready to buy your software, to speed them up through that buyer journey, you know, to get them faster to the point where they need your solution. And that's where it was relevant to. And at that time, you know, webinars was indeed still like, it's a clever pun on seminars, you know, but
yeah,
it's now it's a real thing. So he was very good, anticipated very early.
When did the journey of Webinar Geek started, Walter? Like, what was the exact time?
Yeah, between 2016, 2017, roughly. There were different versions of it. And then, you know, when is the actual start? You know, I think when the product was ready where it is today, it's 2017 where it really started. And of course, expanding. It's not like the roadmap was done in 2017, but that's when it really became a company and a brand.
And I assume, based on two perceptions, first, I was in Amsterdam a couple of weeks ago and I was super surprised how many companies in the Netherlands are bootstrapped and not venture capital financed.
Yeah.
And second, I think also like building something for mid of the funnel, something educational, could be also not a VC story from the beginning. I assume you guys have been bootstrapped from the start on, or am I completely wrong?
Yeah, no, it's a bootstrap company. You're completely right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. So understanding, okay, there was this idea, vision of building something for an educational part of the buyer journey, and then probably went also like in a good way. I guess it was growing in an organic speed.
Yeah.
And then there was a big external factor coming, Corona. I'm assuming this was a time where the business exploded on your side.
Yes, that is very correct. And also because like I said, I was talking about the lead generation things, and that was pretty much the use case for webinars prior to COVID. But then COVID came, and also suddenly with that came a lot of new use cases for webinars as well, such as internal communication. Like, you know, if you have a big organization and you cannot have them all in one room anymore, how do you still distribute that knowledge? Do you want to have a Zoom meeting of 500 attendees? Probably not, you know. So you did like webinars where you kept people engaged, kept people interacted. And Webinar Geek, I don't know if I have all the numbers correct, but I think it was like they had 400 customers prior to COVID, and after COVID, nearly 2,000. So in 2 years, they times five the company, which is, of course, fantastic. But you can imagine the logistical nightmare behind that in terms of platform scalability. So the team here was doing almost 24-hour day shifts with support, and, you know, a ticket that went wrong immediately go into development. It was like just going at it. It was I think it was a hell of a time for them. But, you know, they look back at it, of course, with smiles now, because, you know, that got them where they are today. But I'm sure there were some sleepless nights for some of the employees at that time.
You forget the pain at a certain point of time. This is a good thing of the human human brain. And maybe to understand the business model a bit better before we go deep into the insights, Walter, is like, I'm guessing your ICP is quite horizontal and like agnostic. Yeah, if I think about myself or like people I know, like almost everyone nowadays using webinars. So how is the ICP landscape structured at Webinar Geek?
Yeah, that's a very good question. I think, you know, again, that was one of those things that was probably crystallized before COVID. And then suddenly everyone was hosting webinars, and the ICP shifted from like, you know, this is our lead gen SaaS industry market stuff. And then suddenly everyone that hosts a webinar is an ideal customer profile. And that's still a bit the case. We are fine-tuning it down, and we're doing a lot of learnings in terms of like, you know, which customers have most success with webinars. But it is to this day a very horizontal product. Like, you know, we have healthcare companies that do it to announce new medicines and train their sales staff, but we have SaaS companies that talk about that do it for lead gen and thought leadership. So, you know, there's a lot of use cases, and the platform can handle most things, because in essence, yeah, I mean, a webinar is a webinar. I don't want to down talk it, but, you know, it's not the hardest rocket science of things. So the ICP is very wide, which is not necessarily, I mean, I know niching is important and popular, but in this case, it kind of works.
It kind of works, I guess so as well, which brings me directly to my next question, Walter. Like, you mentioned Zoom, and there's, of course, Google Meets and like all this very generalistic meeting players, which, of course, functionality-wise are probably on a low end. But from a uneducated user perspective, what are the functionalities which really makes you different from this kind of tools, which are necessary for kind of webinar hosting company to deliver product and to deliver value to your ICP base?
Yeah, exactly. That's a very good question. I think it's the same struggle as any fintech SaaS would have. I mean, their biggest competitors are not their competitors. It's typically Excel is their competitor, right? It's what you see most. And it's the same with Webinar Geek. You know, there's a few webinar hosting platforms out there, but the biggest competitor would still be probably just a meeting platform. It's the same kind of story, I would say. I think the big advancement of using webinar tools is that, one, they're purpose-built for webinars. What does that mean? And, like, you know, webinars are often perceived as just like a way to speak to 30 people in one time. And that's, of course, what it is. But I think the difference is made within the platform, the interaction with the audience. Of course, you know, you make sure your audience get a vote, get a get a stage, an actual stage. So you can also invite them on a virtual stage and ask them, like, you know, how did you do this? You can host the workshops, but also just the conversion of things. So, you know, at the end of the line, you want to have conversions of your attendees, right? And what you do typically in a meeting, in a normal meeting platform, you would have like a last PowerPoint slide where it has like, you know, contact us on LinkedIn or find my email or book a slot via this link or blah, blah, blah. But in a webinar software platform, you actually make that an active thing. So, you know, mm-hmm. you have customers actually navigating and going through your product as you go, going through your solutions as you host your webinar and push that conversion, not to like the follow-up email made by anyone or marketing email, just do it in the moment, like convert them right away. I think that's where a lot of the power is. So, you know, you actually, the conversion rates go up massively because you ask them when they have the time, because they're there, they're here for you, right? They're listening to you. So now just make them click right there, because after that, they'll be busy. They have meetings. They have 1,000 other prospect emails. So yeah, that's, so I think, where the biggest power is.
And probably this is also can be seen in the data, I guess, you compare conversions like normal meetings to webinar platforms. Absolutely. So maybe it's a good point of time to like get some data on how webinars are used these days. And mm-hmm. I'm guessing, or like at least my personal perception is that in the last 24 months, there was a big increase in number of webinars held in a lot of industries. So I have a personal feeling that there could be kind of a saturation of the market. So maybe you let us know how many customers are you serving these days with Webinar Geek, and what are like the average statistics of webinars? Maybe you can give us some data around how webinars are used.
Yeah, of course. So we are serving 4,500 customers, trying to close, get 5,000 up by the end of this year. So let's see how we reach that. But it's going good according to target. So quite a lot of customers. I think you're right. It's a saturated market. But I think one of the reasons why webinars are becoming increasingly popular in terms of, if you look at the statistics as well, is because the outbound sales is increasingly more difficult. Right. Yeah. There's so many more BDRs out there, so many more outbound prospectors just trying to book your meetings, trying to spam you with content, adding you on LinkedIn, adding you on this. You know, I woke up today with four requests if I wanted to hire developers for consultancy. I don't know why, but whatever. And, you know, it's becoming so hard to reach your audience. And webinars are very, you know, you have people that lower their defenses. Mm-hmm. Because they don't expect a sales pitch, they expect to be educated. So I think that's why it's increasing so much. It's increasing in SaaS. Looking at your audience, Julius, in SaaS, the webinar usage is still increasing with 35% each year. It's quite high. The problem is, though, if you look at the statistics as well, is people dive into let's host webinars, right? Let's try and do that for ourselves. They dive in sometimes with wrong expectations. I spoke at the Artist Summit, for instance, with one of your attendees. And they said, like, yeah, I'm going to host my first webinar. I'm expecting roughly 250 to 500 attendees. And I was like, but how? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. How? So, you know, and there's a lot of those people that go into that. And my point is more like, you know, don't focus so much on the volume. Just think of it like, you know, even if you would have 10 people listening to what you have to talk about that interests them, even if it's 10, you know how hard it is to get 10 sales meetings on your agenda, right? So it's a lot about managing the expectations and staying consistent with that. I think people need to learn there.
So what's overall of your 4,500 customers, Walter, like what's the average number of attendees in a webinar? Because I think this is like something which I think it's super interesting for our listeners, in terms of expectation management. If I really want to go down this road and try to start or use webinars for myself, what's realistic? Yeah, what is the market? What is the market number?
Exactly. The market number, I think, you know, I will stick to SaaS a bit because, you know, if you look at healthcare, those numbers are diluted because, you know, you have like a lot of internal and other kind of things. So if you look at the SaaS industry, a good sign up is between 30 and 50. It's much lower. Of course, there's obvious exceptions. Like, you know, if you have these big PLG companies with CRMs full of 50,000 prospects, then it usually bumps up because, you know, with the same conversion rate, you would have 200, then it's possible. But typically, you know, if you're anywhere, a base average of a SaaS company is between 30 and 50. It's much lower than you would expect. But again, still so much higher than to try and book 30 to 50 sales dialogues.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I'm completely agree here, Walter. I mean, the question is, of course, how to get the people into your webinar. And I think this is something I would like to discuss with you in the next phase of our conversation. Like, what are the secret ingredients to make a webinar successful or not? And I'm always a big fan of small case studies. Yeah, so I'm happy to invite you to play a little bit with me as a potential webinar geek customer. Mm-hmm. Let's imagine I'm doing an event software. Yeah, like I'm doing a kind of umbrella or event booking or event management software. So far, we did our sales very outbound driven, like cold calls or emails. Never worked with webinars before, but I heard of this kind of new thing on the market, and now talking to you as a CCO of Webinar Geek, and of course having a lot of questions now before we can start doing this. So, what makes a Webinar Geek at Artista, our event app, B2B SaaS, B2B SaaS thing, successful? Maybe we segment it a little bit, and probably it starts with a pre-webinar, the pre-webinar timeframe, Walter, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, typically the webinar consists of, I would say, three phases. Like, one is the pre-registration phase, two is the actual webinar, and three is the post-process. Like, how do you do the follow-ups? But I think for a company, like, you know, if you look at the buyer journey of a SaaS company, a typical SaaS company that would buy a platform like yours that wants to host events or something, I don't know, that's not a SaaS platform probably. But, you know, you have the people that are not aware yet of the problem you're solving. So that's the part where webinars can contribute. Like, you know, probably people host events and they just think of like, oh, I need a good location. You know, that's spamming. I need good food. I need good speakers. But they don't really know that they also need to get the people that attend talking to each other, connect with each other, speak to each other. And, you know, that's something you would use webinars for in terms of education. Like, you know, make sure those people know that, you know, people, the audience will find your network interesting, or your event interesting, if they get to speak to lots of people rather than just sit there listening to, because that's cool, right? Just sit listening to speaker, that's cool. I mean, who wants to go back to school when they're 30 plus? I mean, come on, that's not a fun time. So I think that's part of it. A second is, of course, once they're a bit further in the funnel, they're actively looking for a tool like yours. You need to educate them why yours is best, and then highlight your USPs. Like, you know, why is my event better than those other SaaS events? Well, for instance, for artists, you know, it's you know, we keep C-level only, we keep high profile of audience. We have the most fancy location in Berlin, and the after party are world famous. You know, those are the USPs. You need to speak to your customers that are warmed up and are looking for a solution. That's the reason why they need Artista rather than any other umbrella or something like that. And then, of course, don't forget your customers, right? You have customers already. They need to be educated on the things they may not be using yet, or, you know, how they can get more value out of the product so you keep it sticky. So I think that would be three reasons why you could, as Artista,
use a webinar, host webinars.
Exactly.
And I mean, these are three very different approaches, although like very three different approaches, and also maybe different points of the buyer journey themselves. Yes. So I assume that this will not be three topics for one webinar. It will probably be three very different ones, right?
Yeah, three different ones, but also three different types of companies. So if you have your data a bit structured in your CRM, you would also map them to, I did that at Unium, for instance, you would map that to specific stages. So we would map prospects in our CRM to the lifecycle stage where they are. Do they need to be educated? Are they warm leads? Do we need to convert them, or are they customers, and do we need to educate them and keep them warm or keep them with us, right? So that's, if there were more stages, but I keep it to three now. And based on that, we would also segment the invites. You know, you need to be trained. Okay, that's probably like the bulk of the CRM is those people. Like, you know, if you have 10,000 people in your CRM, 8,000 need to be trained. And then probably another 1,500 need to be converted. And then 500 is the customers, for instance, and they need to be taught. And based on their life cycle in the buyer journey, you would invite them accordingly.
I think this is a very important point if people start thinking about using webinars. What is like really taking a look on the buyer journey of your own customers, where in the journey are they, and then really defining certain webinars for certain use cases and certain purposes, which, as we learned now, are very diverse, from like education or general awareness to, okay, what are my USPs? So what's really the selling proposition, where I'm better than my opponents, where I'm better than other players on the market, then maybe also to like pricing discussion or a pricing comparison at the end. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah,
very important to say this. My next question would have been, okay, where to get attendees from in this pre-event phases? You already mentioned, okay, like take a look on your own CRM and invite people who are already in there. Is this usually the normal way to go, or are there also other like kind of levers or ways, paths to go down to get people to webinars?
I think, you know, it used to be that it used to be just your CRM. But of course, you see the shift now also to LinkedIn. So, you know, a lot of social selling is very good for webinars. Use your own brand, use typically better than the company's brand, but just use the social media platforms that your customers are on, right? It could be LinkedIn, could be Xing, could be Facebook, or what is the other ones called? TikTok. I'm sorry, I'm not very modern. I'm an old man. I know this is audio only, so for those listening, I'm very old. And that's really, I think it. So it's don't keep the invites to one channel. That's a big tip I could give. Like, you know, don't limit yourself to email, because again, email boxes are being flooded with all these prospectors out there that want to get the attention of your prospects. You need to stand out, so you need to also try different ways. And that's also another thing a webinar software could help you buy, right?
If I have an internal discussion now at Archista with our marketing lead, and he's like proposing putting some performance budgets on a webinar. Mm-hmm. And you know, like we're doing this the first time, so I'm a bit skeptical if I really should follow his advice here. What's your view on this? Walter, does it make sense to put performance budgets on invites for webinars, or? Of course, depends usually on CAC, of course, but what's your general view on it?
No, my general view is, of course, do it. I think, you know, marketing is an everlasting discussion of is it really like lead generation or demand generation and those kind of topics. But I think in general, you should always put a target on it. And it can be targets of signups, that can be targets of people that actually show up, that can be targets of people that actually become a customer afterwards. The reason you need to do it is it's not super mega important that you actually reach your targets, but you learn from the content. Like, you know, was this a relevant topic? Was this a good speaker? Because sometimes you have very little signups maybe, but you have super high output from the webinar, like a lot of conversions, a lot of trials, a lot of demos, a lot of customers. You know, that can mean that your topic is spot on, but it's not for everyone. That could also mm-hmm. teach you something about your ICP. So I think targets are super important, not per se to just always have them, but at least measuring is important and targets help with measuring, of course.
I think what's also important in this pre-execution phase is, of course, the concept of the webinar itself. So if I need to promote my webinar, there needs to be a couple of key factors which are set in stone and are predefined. Yeah. And I, for myself, saw a lot of very ugly visuals. I saw very uninspiring titles for webinars. So there are probably a couple of success factors and no-goes if mm-hmm. I design and set up a webinar. Could you share 100%. A little bit your best practices here for our listeners?
Yes. So first of all, I think one of the things SaaS companies struggle with is like every one of us solves 3 or 4 pain points, you know, big pain points. Of course, there's many other like small little features that complement stuff, but it's like 3 or 4 things that we usually try to squeeze in our pitch. And to keep the storytelling engaging is hard, right? We're going to again talk about this thing. So there's 2 things to that I want to leave you with. Is one, it's not bad to always tell the same story because the audience will change, right? There will be new people added to your CRM. There will be new people in different jobs. There will be promotions. There will be shifts. There will be people leaving companies, whatever. You know, there will always be a reason to tell the same story. It's not a bad thing. That's the first thing. So, you know, there's always people like, I need a new topic. Yeah, of course, good, but not so much as you would think. Second, I think, you know, have you ever seen a movie, Julius? You know, do you have time for
yes.
that next to your entrepreneurial
yes.
life? Yeah, okay, good.
Yes, I did.
I think, you know, what is important to know about movies is like every movie is about good versus bad, good guys versus bad guys. Every single movie is roughly about that, right?
You know,
So it's the same story, but packaged completely different. So, you know, I think with that knowledge, you should also think about like, okay, how are my 4 things, you know, my 4 things that I'm solving, the 4 pains, how are they packaged differently? How I can tell the same story about, you know. For instance, to give you a practical example, I was talking about RevOps, you know, what is the power of revenue operations? And I think, you know, typically you have sales going left and you have marketing going straight ahead and you have customer success going right. And if you look at that, like, you know, if you would send three hunters into a woods and, you know, say, kill a deer, and then one uses a bow and the other uses a gun, and the other uses something, I don't know what they use. But, you know, ultimately, if they don't go together and hunt a deer, one of them will, with the bow and arrow, will probably shoot a bird because they at some point get so hungry because they keep missing those stupid arrows. The other one actually shoots the gun at the deer, but the deer explodes because it's way too powerful for the deer. And, you know, it's a different story, but it tells the same principle of go to market. But it's just a complete different story. And you should try to think of that for your own pains, like, you know, how I can tell this story in a different way. And I think we live in a day and age where AI can really play a powerful part in that, right? Just prompt ChatGPT or whatever, like, hey, you know, this is the pain point to solve. Make this a fairy tale. Why not? And present a fairy tale. Which resonates, which is easy to look at. You can also use AI for the images and videos to make it really appealing. You know, we live in a day where your webinar should not be more boring than any Breaking Bad show or, you know, or Lord of the Rings. Doesn't matter, you know. Just, you can raise a high quality and keep your audience engaged. So use the tools at your disposal and try to tell the story in a unique way every single time.
I will nevertheless go one level deeper here. Well, so like, what are the most important things of a webinar? I'm thinking about like a LinkedIn feed now. Yeah. So is it the visual which like triggers people to sign up? Is it the title? Is it the topic? Is it the speaker? So there's so many elements which are, if I start with this now at Artista, I don't have a clue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which could be important. So are there any recommendations? Okay, these are the two things which should be very crystal clear, and the other three things are nice to have, but not really super important.
Exactly. I think, you know, if you work with speakers, that's always good. So because, again, you know, it's about lowering the guard of your audience, and an external speaker will always do that because they know it's not a salesperson that's going to pitch here. It's a person that actually is a subject matter expert. So a speaker is a good trigger. Also, if the speaker does some, you know, own social media or uses their own network to gain some traction, that's also good. But typically it's the visual on a LinkedIn feed that keeps you, or not keeps you focused, but at least draws your attention. Mm-hmm. And then it needs to be the content and the speaker that complements that. But it's the visual that's probably, you know, oh, what is this? And then you're going to dive in. And then the first three bullets need to be good in terms of like, okay, so this is what it is. And it's always fun to keep a bit of a cliffhanger in the post. Like, you know, we're going to dive into blah, 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 and maybe something more. Do it a bit better than what I say now. A cliffhanger is always good as well.
Okay. And the visual, you say, well, it should be super colorful, should be like are there some secrets we haven't seen yet, or anything where you really see that the data is outperforming certain other cases or not?
Yeah, I think the data actually shows is that videos are the most engaging. So just people talking with subtitles, because people use their phone in office spaces and they have the sound off. So with subtitles, videos work the best. So if you just have a video of you walking outside in the forest, talking about the webinar you're hosting, those are the best performing in terms of engagement. Okay. Second is just random pictures. Just random can pictures. Be anything. Yeah. not another selfie, to be honest, because that's, you know, that's, there's plenty of those on your LinkedIn feed. So, you know, don't do the typical selfie, but do something else. I mean, it can, I once saw just a picture of a pink square. It was just a pink square and it drew attention. Like, what is this pink square? Why would somebody post a pink square on my LinkedIn? I'm busy. But it got my attention, right? It can be simple things. I don't know if the problem is, if I give one practical tip now, everyone's using it and then it doesn't draw attention anymore, right?
Very true. But that video converts the best is, I think, very insightful advice here, Walter, which is super powerful. So maybe going into the webinar itself, I think we design it in a good way. We got a cliffhanger. We get people invited at Artista's first webinar. We have maybe an external speaker who will tell about the power of networking on events and why networking should be prepared via a digital app. So what can go wrong within the webinar? Like, let's say do we do 10 minutes? Do we do 2 hours? What should I be aware of?
Exactly. I think the time limit for one speaker should be below 20 minutes. So, you know, if you have one face you're going to show, 20 minutes is the maximum I would I would look at someone. Sounds so bad, but that's what the statistics say. So you know, I agree with the statistics there, and I think that's good. If you have multiple speakers or you have a bit of an interactive panel and you're doing a lot of engagement with the audience, you can stretch it up to 30-40 minutes. But that's where I would really limit it, because people have lives. You know, they probably, you know, getting an hour free in their calendar is already difficult. If you can do anything below 30 minutes, it's good. If you can't, because you have an interactive panel, that's worth it. But, you know, the lineup for that panel needs to be like, okay, but I still want to hear from this person because that expertise is relevant. So I will stick until I hear that perspective. That's a time stretcher, right? But still keep those to 40 minutes because, you know, you leave some time to act.
Exactly. I think this is one of the biggest mistakes I'm seeing a lot. Well, there's like people designing this webinars for like 30 to 60 minutes. And of course, yeah, you know, like it's their webinar. It doesn't feel like long if you do it for yourself and you have a lot of stuff to tell and maybe you have two speakers. But if you're sitting on the other side, imagining there is like a founder or a decision maker or even like a buyer and spending like an hour of time for watching a webinar for like a product he's not really really into bottom of the funnel already, yeah, before decision making, just like on an awareness stage or educational stage. I think it's a crazy amount of time you're demanding from people. Yeah, so keeping it short, I think, is probably also challenging for the host of the webinar, because it means like no chit chat around, super sharp information, and I guess it should be also like scripted or designed quite in detail beforehand. Huh? Otherwise, it probably runs like in a direction you don't want to.
Yes, it's one of those things, like, you know, one of the things I'm personally very bad at is dry running.
Yeah.
But for webinars, I always do it because, you know, you just and even if you time it by yourself, there's going to be Q&A stuff, there's going to be technical whatever, there can be something, you know, my microphone is not working, it's going to take longer than what you time yourself, so always leave some headroom for that as well, I would say. But yeah, keep it short. And one thing you actually see, and you see that, of course, in the just normal B2C market, is the attention span of people goes down, right? Yeah. Usually when YouTube was just founded, I was looking at videos for 15 minutes and it was fine with me. Now, if they take longer than 15 seconds, I get bored. It's a bit exaggerated, but you get the principle. And I think that's the same for B2B, right? People are busy, and we see trends of customers hosting web shorts, we call them web shorts. So, you know, short webinars, 5-10 minutes, educational, to the point, data dumping, 10 minutes, move on. I mean, who doesn't have 10 minutes to spare about their subject, right? So that's a cool thing, and that's what I suggest to your listeners as well. Try it out, see how it works, and don't do one per whatever, but keep those a bit more frequent. So, you know, if you do two a month, for instance, one every 2 weeks, then you have like a flowing schedule, people can make those time free, and you still ultimately at the end of the month have grabbed their attention for 20 minutes, but you did it in two sessions, and people are like, I'll 10 minutes, I can do that, right? They don't get coffee in the middle, they don't scroll the internet in the middle, they can keep their attention for 10 minutes. So that's a nice little trick to try out.
Webby shorts, you call them, yeah?
Yes, I just made that up.
A bit bumpy, but yeah, I guess yeah. You probably made it up.
Yes.
One question, which is a little bit of the linkage between registration phase and the execution phase. Although it's like, how do people really register for the event and then attend? I guess on Webinar Geek, you want to have the data at a certain point. You want to at least the email address or contact point. So you really channel people from LinkedIn or other promotional channels into a registration on Webinar Geek, or how does it? What's the recommendation here?
Yeah, that's typically what it is. So, you know, from Webinar Geek, you're connected to a CRM, you're connected to several mailing tools or whatever you use to measure the conversion. But also, you know, Webinar Geek will have the data and the insights to also tell you, you know, typically when you have 100 signups, expect 20 people live or something like that. So a lot of those statistics you will also get. So you can also have set KPIs to your marketing manager at Artista. Like, you know, we need to drive that conversion up. But one of the trends, and this is important to remember, is like people also, a lot of the people sign up for webinars just because they want the recording. I can't make it a day in time. I have a meeting, but they're going to sign up because I'm going to get the recording. So they're going to watch it on their own time. They're going to watch it when they're in the car, on their way home. They're going to watch it when they have a free moment on the couch in the evening, you know. So that's attendance. I mean, at an actual event, it's bad, right? Because they don't show up. But they will show up, but maybe just at a different time. So also don't focus too much on the actual conversion. Check also how are your video on demand performing, how is the content consumed afterwards. And those are things that webinar software will also differentiate in versus like a Zoom. Yeah, I mean, if they click a HubSpot link or whatever, that you can still track that. But how long did they watch? When did they switch off? Those kind of things you would need webinar tooling for.
It's an interesting point of view, because usually if you think about webinars the first time, you think about the webinar itself and the point when it's executed. But you said, okay, there is a aftermath, a long period afterwards where you can use this recorded webinar on page in certain social media channels or other formats, and it still converts, it still delivers the purpose of educating your customers, and then also leads to driving people down the funnel, yeah?
Yes, absolutely, yeah.
Nevertheless, one question, if I do the webinar, and I like to, of course, maximize the number of people attending in my first webinar, I'm an ambitious guy. Yeah, I like to. So what's a good time to do it? Is it like 9 a.m. in the morning on Mondays? Is it like Friday at 4 p.m. where like the most of the stuff is done and have time for a webinar of Artista? When should I do it?
Yes, that's a very unique question. It's the same. You get that question a lot as well. Like, when is a good time to post on LinkedIn, right? And the problem is people search for that every single day. And the problem is people find the answer and then start doing it, and the content gets diluted. It gets wasted between a pile of other things. So typically, I would say Thursday around 11 is good. Proven and Friday,
Until this point of time,
exactly.
From
Monday this thing airs, exactly. So that's one, and two is Friday 1 p.m. So 4 p.m. everyone is doing their mini Oktoberfest, right? But 1 p.m. is still good on Friday. People try to keep their Friday afternoon meeting free, clean up, schedule the organization, do the administration, whatever. So that's a good time as well.
So they have a bit Thursday of mind 11, space. Yeah, they have a bit of mindset of for new projects, for educating themselves, for looking for new solutions. And
exactly. But again, this is a general statistics answer. Yeah. But if you have, if you have a SaaS selling to healthcare, maybe in healthcare, it's common that everyone at 1 p.m. gets 4 hours off from the government. I don't know, right? But you need to check out also, like, figure it out for your audience. And that's how you do that, is measuring what worked. And also, again, if you repeat the same webinars, you would also see if you switch that over throughout the week. Like, okay, we first keep this webinar on a Monday at 10, and then we try it on a Wednesday afternoon. You can also see, like, okay, it's the same audience, same topic. What does it do with the signup? So also measure that a bit. That's why repeating is another thing why it's good to repeat.
So we are finished with the second stage, which is executing the webinar. I think now the work starts really, Walter. So I had people attending. I have maybe people coming in, seeing it on demand. What do I do with the data? What's the best practice here to really then use this more educated people who consumed my content, who got like smarter about my solution? What do I do with them? What's the good aftermath play?
Exactly. So first of all, during the webinar is when your aftermath starts. So I think a lot of people think like, okay, webinar is done, presentation is finished, Q&A is over, people had their chat done, and now we are going to send them a marketing email and move on with our lives. So actually for me, we call it at Webinar Geek, we call it sales page. It's the final slide, the final part of your presentation. Is an interactive thing full of links, like, you know, and if it's educational, a white paper about like diabetes type 2 or whatever, I don't know what it is, but like, you know, make their people click on certain things, put buttons there that, you know, drive conversion to push the education forward. So again, if it's very to the low end, to the early stage of the buyer journey, don't try to squeeze them into a demo, because even if you get them into a demo, they're not going to be a happy customer. So, you know, stop thinking like that and just, okay, well, how much more can we educate them so we can rush them a bit through the buyer journey, and they will find us because they remember us from educating them. So you get the goodwill from that. So end the webinar with the education and keep their attention during that. So like, you know, here's some links for you to explore more about this topic we spoke about, or here's the link to the speaker if you want to find out more. Like, you know, push that in, put as much of the conversion process in your webinar, because they are there, they reserve the time for that. A lot of that can be done with a sales page. You can play even mini product demos in the background. You know, again, depending on for which stage of the buyer journey you will held the webinar. if it is a, for instance, if you keep it for your customers, put a meeting link there for your customer success managers, something like that, that they can contact them on how to use the feature, get the adoption hype up. If it's for the conversion, then it's, of course, time to put the sales rep in front of them again. And if it's for the buyer journey, push educational content forward. But use that last stage, because that's where most of the conversion happens, is in the webinar, because they have allocated the time for you then. Then it's the post follow-up, right? And then it's, again, it's more of a wider topic, like how do you do sales, I would say. I'm a strong believer of the phone. I'm old, again, okay. To repeat that. But that's why I also work with you there. I'm a strong believer of the phone.
Me too.
So, you know, why not pick up the phone? Hey, dear prospect. Hey, dear customer. What did you think? And again, not for the ones in the educational stage, but on the later stages of the thing. Like, hey, what did you think? And keep it casual. Just ask them how the webinar was. Don't start pitching. Just ask them what they thought, anything we can learn. And also pass those, don't do it out of social duty, but also pass those learnings on to like a marketing team or something like that. What did the prospect say about the webinar? How was the content? How was the speaker? Get some intelligence.
One question here, maybe in between. So should I ask him for the number of the people when the registration starts, or is this an information I take out of the CRM anyways?
From the webinar, you mean? As a salesperson?
Because if I need to call them, I need the number. So I either have to ask for the number before the event, for the webinar, at the registration process, or I need to do it like before it or at any other point of the journey. So where's the number coming from?
Yeah, the number typically I would say is coming from the CRM before. So
okay.
If you get people to register to your webinar, my advice is to keep this form, the sign up form, as short as possible. If people see more than 5 questions, what stage is your company, blah, blah, blah. It's like, yeah, never mind. You know, email address where you need to send the invite to in your name is more than enough. The rest we can dig up through LinkedIn scraping. There's all kind of automation tools to get phone numbers into a CRM and get LinkedIn profiles into a CRM. So don't waste your time with that. Make sure your CRM is completed for that. Or otherwise, you know, get the attendee list, scout them on LinkedIn, do a Lucia, what are all those tools, Cognizant, Apollo, I don't know, things like that. Get their phone number and give them a ring, but don't make it part of the sign-up process.
Keep it simple for registration. Get the information you need from somewhere else.
Yes.
I have a last question, Walter, pre-last question. Like, what is maybe from your experience, what's the funniest webinar or the funniest setup or maybe also the craziest one you have seen among your 4,500 customers? Was there something which really stood out and you thought, like, Jesus Christ, quite innovative or just crazy? Like, is there a story you can share?
I don't know. I think I came into this with like I had my own mindset how I used to do webinars at Junium, right? So that's where I came from. And the most surprising thing to me was that there's a lady, a customer that hosts yoga lessons in front of 500 people.
Okay.
And it's 500 people actively participating with the webinar. So I don't know if it's super crazy, but I was like, yeah. So there's plenty of use cases out there for webinar, and it opened my horizon to like, okay, so this thing can really, like, you know, can be set up for everything. So that to me was like it's nothing weird or something. It's just something that's stuck with me.
And I think it's an impulse how people could think about using webinars in very, very different ways. You get some other examples for internal usage, maybe also for partnership could be an option to use in a certain way. So thanks a lot, man, for like sharing your insights, sharing some interesting data, sharing some recommendations and best practices. I think I feel confident now to try the first webinar with Artista and hopefully sell my event management software to a couple of new prospects after educating them. You need to educate me before you're leaving, Walter, in terms of a very good place to eat in Amsterdam, I guess.
Very good place.
Any recommendation here?
Yeah, so I have two little secrets. So, you know, if you have, first of all, for a nice, good dinner, good food, I'm a bit of a meat addict, so maybe that's not the best. But I really love Cannibal Royale. It's like it's a place where you can have good food, and it's just really nice vibe in a restaurant.
Cannibal Royale.
Yes, nice exactly. Name. It's a good name, exactly. Yeah. But also in general, like, I don't know if Fabo is an international thing. I don't think so, but it's a wall with fried snacks. So you just go there, you put your ATM card against the machine, and you take a snack out of a wall, which is like microwaved, warmed up. It's lowest quality on the planet, but if you're walking in the streets of Amsterdam at 11 p.m., it's awesome. So, you know.
or at 8 a.m. after a crazy night in Amsterdam. I can see this good. This case, Walter.
Exactly. It's a good... Yes, absolutely.
So, man, thanks a lot for your time this morning. Thanks a lot for all your insights. Was a pleasure once again having you the first time here, but not the first time in our conversation. So thanks a lot. Have a great weekend. And we see each other latest at the Artist Circus in April, I guess.
Absolutely. Count on it.
Cool. Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, everyone, for spending your time with us today. We hope you enjoyed the conversation and insights from Walter Rehbergen about webinars and are delighted to have you back next week for another insightful episode of Artist on Air.